going to cover the whole book of Ecclesiastes, and obviously we will not go into great depth, but I hope that we can get the meaning of why it was written and the meaning of what it says, so we can gain what God wants us to learn from it through the inspired writer Solomon. Does anybody know what the word Ecclesiastes means? Huh? Well, no, not exactly. You know, in a roundabout way, yes. And maybe in some language that may be right. It means different things in different languages. But the word actually means, the best that I can figure out, is preacher. In Latin, it means speaker before an assembly, which in a sense is church. And in the Septuagint, the Greek word was pretty much Ecclesiastes, probably pronounced a little different, but it was spelled E-K-K-L-E-S-I-A-S-T-E-S. So I guess the same except for the C's were K's. But it's about a speaker or a preacher, in this case a preacher of the word, before a group of people. And as Solomon did in Proverbs, he does the same in Ecclesiastes by immediately giving the reason for this discourse at the beginning. And knowing what you know about Ecclesiastes, before we even get into it, what's the main thought of Ecclesiastes?
All is vanity.
Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And Solomon says that in the second verse. Solomon shows us the triviality of physical life and the things that we strive for that we can't keep or enjoy very long at all. He doesn't condemn the physical things of life as long as they're used in a righteous way or not used in excess. But it's all trivial if it's not used for the glory of God or in moderation. And there's other ways to say that. Also, he talks about whatever man tries to do with the great accomplishments that we think we've made, whatever things we may try to do, the things that God has set in order will never change. What are some of those things that you might think of that come to mind? What are some things that God, and I'm thinking about creation, what are some of the things God set in order that man has no control over whatsoever? The seasons.
We all die like the dog.
We all die. Okay. And a couple things that came to my mind was, we hear about global warming or climate change, whatever you want to call it. Pollution of the ozone layer. And yes, we do pollute the earth, without a doubt. And we can look at places where the sea is so polluted with all the plastic floating in it, or maybe big oil spills, things like that, that it just makes you sick. But that's not going to destroy the world. It may change the immediate environment that certain people live in. Obviously, it will. But it's not going to end the world. You know, we think about nuclear weapons and how world leaders are so afraid that the other side is going to push the button. We're always prepared for that. But I really don't worry about that at all, because I know that that's not how the world's going to end. It's just not going to. And there's nothing that man can do that will change that. So the things of, I guess, for lack of a better term, the things of nature that God has created will continue till He ends all things. And I even hesitate to use the term nature, because the way the world looks at nature is like it's something that God has nothing to do with it. It's something that exists on its own, and there is no God, and therefore it's nature. And this is not true. But for lack of a better term, if we want to call it nature, God created all those things. Another thing we might think about as we go through this book is there are many proverbs in the book of Ecclesiastes. In fact, it's pretty much full of them almost. So the book of Proverbs we think about continues into Ecclesiastes. It's just that Solomon has a different mindset and is talking about the futility of life, temporal life, and that's what we really need to keep in mind. Temporal life is very futile unless lived for the Lord. Yeah, I thought about that a lot, and I mean, I think he is, but I don't know that I could prove it, you know. I mean, it just seems like it's from someone who has more wisdom and has lived a longer period of time to me. And I thought I would, let's read the first chapter completely through, because it gives us a lot of, it covers a lot of ground that the rest of the book really goes into a lot of detail about. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. So he was king when he wrote it, obviously. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All right, let's stop for just a second here. He talks about life and death, the generations there in verse 4. He talks about the sun, he talks about the wind, he talks about the rivers running into the sea, this cycle of evaporation and rain, and these are things that man cannot control. God set them in order, and they will continue until time is over. And there's nothing we can do about it. Well, maybe that's not true. There are things we can do. Like I said before, we pollute, we do this, we do that, the other, but we will not stop it from happening. Verse 8, all things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. So when we think we've discovered something, what do you think about that? How do you qualify that statement? If you've discovered something new, is it new to you? Yeah, it's new to you. But is it new, really? Who is it new to? Just the people that haven't found it out yet, right? How about all the millions and billions of people that's lived before us and all those that will come after us? Those that's lived before us, some may have understood it, some may have found it out, and we just now find it out. But Solomon says, verse 10, let's read on. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come, but those by those who will come after.
You know, I think that we've been left with the picture that in those early times, people were so underdeveloped and they were these cavemen that couldn't think or do this or that. And I highly suspect that people were just as ingenious and lots of ways that we are.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, man has made great progress in different fields, and I want to talk about that in a few minutes, that people then would have no idea about. But I agree with you, Bob, that the picture that many people want us to believe is that, you know, that we were these knuckle-dragging Neanderthals that didn't know anything, you know, and that's not right at all. If we look at the Bible, we understand. I mean, there were libraries in the time of Abraham. Think about that. In the time of Abraham, there had been libraries discovered, geological discoveries of books, so many books that they were called libraries. So, okay, let's move on. Verse 12. What?
Mike, before you get past verse 11, I think verse 11 is repeated in other places. The basic idea is if you forget the past, you shouldn't forget the past. That's
yeah.
The basic idea. There's no remembrance of former things. Later on, we're told that, well, I guess not later on, but in Leviticus, we're told not to destroy ancient
landmarks.
Why is that? You ought to remember the things that happened in the past.
Yeah, it's amazing.
If nothing's new, what's getting ready to happen is already happened. You ought to learn.
It's amazing how fast we forget if we remove those things.
You know, I keep talking about nothing new. As I study more and more, I'm trying to look at these landmarks or these guideposts, I guess. I'm learning new things.
Yeah.
But they're not really new. They're just new to me.
Yeah, and Solomon had learned this when he wrote this. Okay, verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. So it seems that Solomon wanted to, he had this great wisdom given to him by God, and he knew that. It seems that he wanted to find out everything there was to know about everything. And he knew more about everything than everyone else did, that's for sure. And he says in verse 15, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. Things are the way they are. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness, and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom, and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. So he says, I can't, I'm like trying to grab hold of something you can't get. And interesting statement there in 17, he set his heart, or in other words, he was determined to know not only wisdom, but wickedness, folly, and madness, he says. And then verse 18, for in much wisdom is grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. What? I thought the whole book of Proverbs was about attaining wisdom and knowledge. Why does he say this?
Well, he said, don't get it.
Yeah.
Jay? I don't think he's saying don't get it. I think he's saying that when we learn the history and when we see what mankind is capable of, it should grieve us because it should bother us that we are so sinful. It should bother us that we have been so wrong with God.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all those things are right. My thought on this was that in much wisdom, in much temporal wisdom, is grief. Are we ever going to regret the wisdom of God, the knowledge of God? Is that something that we will regret? I don't believe so. What we do regret, as James said, is when we understand the temporal things of life, the way things are, the way people treat each other, there's a lot of grief in that. And those in authority, those in power that know things that other people don't know. You ever notice how people in power, and you know, you might use a president, you ever notice how much older they look when they're done with their 4 or their 8 years than when they took office? Why is that? Because all that weight they carried on their shoulders. There's a lot of grief in all the knowledge that they are privy to that the average citizen has no clue of what's going on. And they have the responsibility. And I think Solomon's talking about that. Okay, any other thoughts before we move on? What I want to do with the rest of the book is just look at a few, several passages that I picked out. And, you know, there's no way to hit all of them, all of the thoughts, or go into great detail, but...
Yeah. To your point, my reference is Ecclesiastes 12:12. It says, "And further, my son, be admonished by these: of making many books there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh."
Yeah.
And the thought that, you know, if you try to chase all the temporal knowledge you can get, you're just going to make yourself tired, and it's not going to make you any better in God's eyes.
The thought comes to mind, you know, I know there is some people that advocate or at least have tried different religions, one religion after another, to try to find the one they think's right when they knew the truth from the start. If you have the truth, why are you going to waste your time with what you know is not true? When God said something, says something is true, can something else be true also? No. Not if it's opposed to it. So why waste your time with that? And I think that's what he's talking about in much reading much books or the study of much books.
So in that case, the wisdom of God can be worrisome to a sinful heart. To a sinner, they don't like the wisdom of God.
No.
No. And they pass the worry on it, and they just slough it off like, "Oh, it's not true. I'll go find some more."
Yeah. Don't want to deal with it. Okay, let's look at chapter 2. I picked out verses 24, 25, 26. This is a thought that's throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. "Nothing is better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind." So he says it's good to enjoy life, the things that you work for. God wants you to work. God wants you to make gain, profit, and enjoy the temporal things of life if we keep those in the proper perspective. If we don't worship those things, if we still put God first, He does want us to enjoy the comforts of life and the profits that we get from working. Because who gave us the ability to do that? God did. He gave us the knowledge. He gives us the wisdom, the ability to think and reason. And it's only right that we profit by that. And he says, the sinner will have the work of gathering and collecting to give to those who are good before God. Well, now, what about those who are wicked but are rich? Does this contradict itself? No, it doesn't. He also says in Proverbs that things, time and chance happen to all men. We'll get to that in a minute here, if we don't run out of time.
Think about the parable of the talent. Like, what happens to the one talent of the wicked man? He was given to one of the right ones.
Right.
There's something there, because Jesus repeats that same principle.
Well, and I think a lot of the thought is, the person who doesn't work with the knowledge that God has given him and the strength that God has given him, the lazy man, as Solomon condemned in Proverbs, will in all likelihood wind up having nothing, having very little, and working for, if he works at all, working for the righteous, working for the diligent, and depending on them, because he doesn't live the way that he should. But Solomon says, all of these things, the good and the bad, this is vanity and grasping for the wind. What does this word vanity mean here? Does it? I don't want to give away my thought.
Really, no purpose, vanity.
It does not mean evil, because we know it's not evil for us to work by the sweat of our brow and produce profit, okay, and live a better life. But even though we do all that, like we said before, we're still going to die. We still have allotted amount of days that God has given us, and we need to make the most of it while it's here and keep the temporal life in perspective. And I'm sure there's other many other things that we can get out of that, but that was just my thought on it.
But it's really kind of empty. It really doesn't satisfy.
Yeah.
And no matter the amount of work that you do to save us, we still have to have God in the sacrifice.
Right. Right. God wants us to enjoy the fruit of our labor and our daily pursuits, as we said before, and to try to be comfortable. And look at chapter 5, verses 18 through 20. I think he just goes into a little more detail. Somebody read that, please. Chapter 5, 18 through 20.
Here is what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and enjoy the good of all of his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life which God has given him. For it is his inheritance. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart.
All right, thank you. All right, we need to move on here. I'm not going to get anything close to done. In chapter 3. We're to realize that there's a time and a reason, a purpose for everything. Why? Because God has ordained us. This is a very, famous might be the word, passage in the Scriptures. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. And then he goes into the listing of many things, which we don't have time to read. I think one of the big thoughts here that Solomon wanted us to know is that just understand that whatever happens is going to happen. Those things happen. It's how we react to those things that's really important. We're going to have loved ones die. We're going to have babies born in our family. Rejoice when they're born and be sorrowful when they die. That's life and that's death. That's the cycle that he talked about before. And don't try to change things. You know, we don't go to a funeral and tell flippant jokes about silly stuff, do we? Now there may be some humor occasionally at a funeral. I thought about Larry's funeral and about how his brothers talked about his life and had us all laughing. But yet we were sorrowful that he was gone. But on the other hand, it was a time to mourn. And, you know, every time we go to a funeral or are with someone near the time of their death, we need to remember that it is better to go to the house of mourning than the house of mirth. And I thought I had that wrote down. That's in the book of Ecclesiastes. Maybe we'll get to it in a minute here. But Why is that? Why is it better to go to the house of mourning?
I think we're more so reminded about what lies ahead.
Right. We are reminded we're all going to die, therefore we should live accordingly, shouldn't we? Okay. Verse 18 and verse through 21 is just a little bit about death, and it's about comparing the death of an animal and a human being. And he talks here about the spirit. Okay? Not the soul, necessarily, but the spirit. We know that an animal does not have a soul, but when he says spirit, it appears to me that he is talking about the breath of life. When an animal dies, the spirit goes down, or in other words, it ceases to exist. When a man dies, his spirit goes back to God who gave it. Verses 18 through 21. Our bodies all go to the same place because we're made of dust and the animal was made of dust. All right, let's move on. Ecclesiastes 5, verses 1 through 6. He says, basically, watch your mouth. Watch what you say. And the reason I said James is because I thought about James, the third chapter, when he talks about the tongue. Same thing. And we're actually not talking about our mouth or our tongue. What are we talking about here?
In chapter 5, here, it's about what you promised to do.
Well, when he says your mouth or your tongue, your heart, your mind, it's what controls that physical thing that says the words. Let your words be few. And he talks about that a lot, and there was one verse that says, don't even curse the king in your bedroom, because a little bird might hear it, and the bird might fly away and tell people. Or in other words, somebody might be listening to what you say when you think you're in private. Okay. Verse in chapter 5 there, verses 8. I want to read verse 8. If you see the oppression of the poor and the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, do not marvel at the matter. Do we see that? Sure we do. Do not marvel at the matter, for high official watches over high official, and higher officials are over them. I used to think, well, he meant that those that are higher up will straighten things out. I don't think that's what he says at all. What Solomon's saying is corruption goes all the way to the top. Don't be surprised, because all men are the same. Sure they do. Because if one of them caves in, then they all topple down, don't they? Because they all know about each other. Corruption goes to the top. Okay. Verses 10 through 17, riches are vanity. Talks about riches and being vanity. Verse 12 is a good one to read. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. A man that works hard, even though he doesn't have much, goes to bed at night and sleeps, relaxes. If he lost what he gained that day or lost what he has, he can gain it back. But those who have accumulated and maybe inherited great riches are always on the guard, because somebody is always trying to take it away from them. And anyone that has a lot of money understands that. Somebody wants it, and they want to get it any way they can get it. And the rich understand that. And Solomon knew that. Okay, chapter 7, verses 1 through 4. Would someone please read that? That's one of the thoughts I had before. Chapter 7, 1 through 4.
Good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will take its part. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of the fool is in the house of mourning.
Okay. A really good passage for us to think about when we go to a funeral. here's something else that might go along with that. How is character built in a person?
That was good that you were made strong. So maybe from that point of view, when you have problems, things of that nature, or like not answer whatever you're supposed to do, you can keep your mind straight.
Okay. The last part of what you said there is kind of what I was thinking about. Is our character, are we made a stronger person when everything goes just wonderful? No. We're made stronger by adversity. How do you build your physical muscles up? By sitting around on the couch, eating, you know, ice cream and watching TV? No. By work, by exercise, by resistance. Is how muscles are built up. Our character is built by adversity and overcoming that with God. And I think, you know, that the same thought is true here when we think soberly about the end of our life when we're confronted with someone else's death and we are made better for that. We become a better person. We're to be resolved to live better. Here's an interesting thought in verse 21 and 22. These are proverbs, by the way. These are just random thoughts that Solomon's throwing out here. Verse 21. Also, do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. For many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. So when people say something about us, if every single time we take that to heart, well, we shouldn't. And why is that?
Because we've done the same thing.
Because we have done the same thing, and
we're only hurting ourselves by
yeah. Should we always disregard it? What people say about us? No. Not always. Yeah, there's an old saying, take that with a grain of salt, right? Or in other words, another thought is, consider the source, okay? Well, if it's a very wise person that has something to say about you, you probably ought to listen to it. If it's a person whose life is a train wreck, don't pay any attention to it. Right.
They're going to say a bad thing.
Right.
You know, think about being a parent. How many times have you told children to do something and they tell you, you're the worst dad ever?
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're just mean.
Yeah.
Well, do we take that to heart? No, we don't take that to heart. You know that the reason they're saying that is because they don't want to do what we've asked them to do.
Yeah.
It works the same way with service.
Yeah, that's true. And hang in there because when the grandkids come along, it's different, okay? Although I did have one stick her tongue out at me yesterday. Because I told her she needed a whipping. And she did. Okay, we're going to run out of time here. But chapter 8, verse 17. Man will never discover all the works of God or how he is able to do all the things that he does. You know, all people try to understand the universe. And the really good lesson we had by Doug Twaddell a few weeks ago about the Big Bang, the real Big Bang, you know. Well, we're never going to know those things unless God wants them to reveal them to us when we make it to heaven. And it probably won't matter then. But, we're just not going to know all those things. Let's see here. Let me skip down through here. Chapter 12. Okay, let's go to the last chapter. Enjoy your youth before you grow old. Because when you get old, you won't be able to enjoy life as much as you did, at least the physical activities, because your body is failing you. Your body gets older. There's things that you can't do. Here's Jacob. He was a really good ball player in high school. But he's a little bit older now. Can you do all the things you used to do in high school, Jacob? No. No. Huh? Yeah. Or paying for it the next day or two or three afterwards, right?
Wait till you get 80.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find myself fitting all of these verses that come to mind when I'm stumbling along with my Lord, whatever it is.
Yeah. And then, you know, he goes into detail. He talks in poetry. He talks in riddles here in verse 3, 4, 5. He's talking about our physical body there. He's talking about our hands, your body, your arms, your legs, your teeth, your eyes. Verse 4, the last verse 4, all the daughters of music are brought low. What do you think that is? Huh? Hearing. What I thought was the loss of your voice as you get older. Maybe both. When the almond tree blossoms, the almond tree, when it blossoms, the top of it is all silver. What happens to your hair when you get old? Or older, Ben? Well, if you're lucky, it turns gray. If you're not, it falls out, right? Okay. So, we've run out of time here, but one thing I wanted to say was, you know, man has made supposedly great strides. We've discovered how to use electricity. I think, you know, my thought is that it's the greatest invention of all time, the light bulb. I mean, that can be argued, obviously. But we have all these advances in communication. Sound waves were discovered, gamma rays, x-rays, MRIs, the field of medicine, travel in outer space. And yet, we still hate each other and we still murder each other. Isn't that something? All the things we've done, and yet the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and Jesus knew that when he said, the poor you have with you always. Why did he say that? Because he knew that no matter what we do, there'll be great injustice. There'll be those who are poor and oppressed. And so we are to... We just don't have enough time to cover all these things. But Solomon wants us to understand that our physical life without God is vanity. So include God in all that you do. Thank you for your time.